This is Archival Moments on VOCM. For the next hour, we'll explore the great stories and traditions that can be found in the archives of Newfoundland and Labrador. Archival Moments with Larry Doey and Brian O'Connell on VOCM.
Once again, from the rooms in St. John's, welcome back. Another edition of Archival Moments. Larry Doey, our gracious host, director, and archivist here at the rooms.
Thank you for coming back.
Always a pleasure to be here. Always so much happening at the rooms. Well, we're going to talk about a lot of things, but first and foremost, we're going to talk about Mother's Day and when it started in Newfoundland. We're also going to talk about the crowded sidewalks of St. John's and something that maybe this current generation wouldn't know much about, but swish barrels were a big thing back in the old colony.
They were very big. In fact, not only in the old colony, up until recently, because I can remember my university years in the 70s, you were a pretty happy person if you could get your hand on a swish barrel.
How big is a swish barrel?
Oh, you know, just a...
Fairly large.
A fairly large barrel, yeah. So that's where they
You seem to have some expertise in this.
Well, I did witness it. I shoved a few barrels in my day, my university days.
I won't pry, but we'll get to that. Let's start with Mother's Day. Who is Anna Jarvis?
So Anna Jarvis was a woman from Philadelphia, and Anna Jarvis was a woman who had a very close relationship with her mother, who was also Anna. And her mother was a real inspiration to her and to many people in the Philadelphia area. So, for instance, when the American Civil War was on in 1861 to 1865, Anna Jarvis's mother was very keen to assist soldiers on both sides. Okay. She did not distinguish. She just saw a human face in need. And she was pretty keen on establishing relationships between the Unionists and the Confederates, the mothers of both sides. And so when she passed, her daughter, Anna, was really quite devastated, and she wanted to do something to remember her mother and also celebrate all other mothers.
So when was the first Mother's Day celebration?
So actually, the first one would have been in 1908. So May 10th, 1908, Mother's Day events were held at a church in West Virginia and at the department store where Anna worked, at the Wanamaker's department store auditorium in Philadelphia. So they were basically acknowledging the contributions of this woman, and then that became a Mother's Day.
So her mother taught Sunday school in Grafton, West Virginia, and... She did something unique.
She did. So what the daughter did was actually on the day that they were recognizing her mother in West Virginia, the daughter sent 500 white carnations because she couldn't actually be at that church on that particular day. So she sends off the 500 white carnations. And from that very day, the white carnation has become the symbol for Mother's Day. So typically... Every flower shop is going to run out of white carnations on Mother's Day.
All right. Who was John Wanamaker?
So John Wanamaker was a businessman in Philadelphia. And in fact, Anna actually worked with and for him. And he very quickly got behind the idea of a Mother's Day. And the other person that really got behind it was H.J. Heinz, as in...
Heinz Catsup? Heinz 57?
That's right. Okay. And so they saw great potential in this particular day.
A chance to make some money.
A chance to make some money. So everyone saw this as a commercial venture.
And then senators in the United States got involved.
Well, politicians inevitably get involved in everything. And these politicians got in, but these politicians got in on the wrong side of things because these politicians, one guy was Henry Teller. He was a Democrat, and he scorned the whole idea of a Mother's Day. He really thought it was absolutely absurd and trifling. And so he announced that every day should be Mother's Day. Why should we take one day on the calendar and make it Mother's Day? And the other fellow was Jacob Gallagher, and he was the Republican. And he was also quite offended. He said he didn't need other people to remind him that there was a special day for Mother's Day. Every day was a special day when he remembered his mother. He didn't want anyone to remind him, especially he didn't want the florists or the card industry doing that for him.
Did this deter Jarvis?
No, that stirred her on. That just aggravated her. So then that really made her strive even harder and longer to make it the official day.
And then the floral industry got involved.
They got involved in a very big way.
Yeah.
So the floral industry really saw this as an opportunity because they recognized that if we can get every child buying one flower for their mother, well, and you know, you just maximize that, and you know, you've got a thriving industry. So the floral industry wisely supported the Mother's Day notion and the wearing of carnations, and they even then sort of put another spin on it, because now the floral industry wants to make as much money out of Mother's Day as they possibly can. And so then they introduced the idea of wearing a red or a bright flower for living mothers and the white flower for the deceased mothers. So it's now they've got the rainbow of colors.
Now, Jarvis must have known when she started this that it was going to become a commercial event. She must have had some idea that that would take place.
She had some sense that it would, but she had no sense that it was going to become as commercialized as it did.
So she said she wanted the day to be a day of sentiment and not of profit.
That's right. And so she was very keen on that. And so then she became pretty furious that the industry had taken over the sentiment, the true meaning of it. And so she referred to the industry as
charlatans, bandits, pirates, racketeers, kidnappers, and termites that would undermine with their greed one of the finest, noblest, and truest movements and celebrations.
That's right. And she was so angry at it, that's what she did with some friends of hers. They designed buttons. Like, so rather than now flowers, there's a button that you put in your lapel that featured the white carnation. So she was trying to take away that notion of buying the fresh flowers by so people would wear a button.
Wear a button. So she tried to trademark Mother's Day?
Indeed. Well, it was her idea. It was her concept. It was grown out of her love.
Was she able to do that?
No, the courts actually denied her. So she filed a lawsuit applying for a trademark for the carnation and the term Mother's Day because it was her sending the first bouquet of carnations, and it was she who coined the word Mother's Day, a day special.
And Florist Telegraph Delivery Association upset her even more.
Oh, they really got on her bad side because then they said, well, let's buy her. So what they offered to give her a small commission of all the sales of Mother's Day carnations, well, she was enraged that they would think the industry, the florist industry, could buy, you know, her love, her passion for the real sentiment for the day.
And then the United States Postal Service got involved.
And they printed a stamp, and that stamp was in 1934, and she found that really insulting as well. So she just thought that now you have the whole of the American government, especially those officials who initially were so dead set against it, and now they're printing a stamp, and on the stamp they had a carnation, you know, the flower.
Yeah.
And so she just saw this as not a sentiment for mothers. This was another way of selling flowers on Mother's Day.
So what did she want people to do?
Well, it was really quite simple. Her initial notion was that, you know, visit home on Mother's Day. And if you can't make it home, then write a letter to your mother.
Yeah.
And when she says write a letter, she doesn't say go out to the nearest shop and buy a Mother's Day card.
She means write a letter.
She hated that notion as well. And she had something to say about the greeting cards.
She said a maudlin, insincere printed card or ready-made telegram means nothing except that you're too lazy to write to the woman who has done more for you than anyone else in the world. She also said any mother would rather have a line of the worst scribble from her son or daughter than any fancy greeting card.
And now there, anyone that's holding a Mother's Day card now that wasn't created by the hand of their own child,
not
you have much to reflect on.
Right. So she also got upset with charities who are using Mother's Day for fundraising.
So charities about this time, especially in the 1930s, 1940s, are really getting into the idea of making money off of Mother's Day. And so she actually showed up at a American War Mothers function where they were selling carnations, profiting from Mother's Day, as far as she was concerned. So she was actually dragged screaming out of the meeting of the American War Mothers. She just was now at that point.
She went after Eleanor Roosevelt?
She went after Eleanor Roosevelt. She thought that Roosevelt and the Roosevelts and the flower industry and the card industry were all just out to make a buck and not recognizing the true meaning of Mother's Day.
And one of her last appearances, she was going door to door?
She was going door to door in Philadelphia with a petition. So she was actually petitioning or asking people to sign this petition, asking that Mother's Day be rescinded. Of course, that didn't happen, but it was that was really in her twilight years.
So tell me about the Mother's Day salad.
Oh, so years after she founded the Mother's Day, yeah. She went into a restaurant in Philadelphia to discover that they were serving a salad, and it was called the Mother's Day salad. So she was just horrified. Yeah. She just thought, now they've really gone too far with all of this. So here now you have all of the restaurants and making profiteering from the notion of a Mother's Day. So she took the salad and she slammed her salad plate onto the floor. She took some money out of her purse and put it on the table just to show that she paid for it.
Yeah.
But she was just horrified that the restaurant industry was now in on the Mother's Day racket.
So what eventually became of Anna Jarvis?
So she became a recluse in her later years. She became a recluse. And in fact, the last number of years of her life, she spent it at a mental asylum in Westchester, Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
And a recluse, and some people have written about her, a recluse and a hoarder.
Okay.
She started keeping everything that she possibly could.
The florist industry got involved in her final days.
Well, the florist industry, but she didn't know this, so she was put into an asylum. She was treated very well, private rooms and all of this, and died in November the 24th, 1948. But she didn't know it, but it was actually the florist industry who were paying for all of her bills. They were basically paying for her accommodation in the last few years of her life.
I suppose in their mind it was the least they could do for a woman who gave them so much profit.
A woman who gave them one of the most profitable days in the floral industry is Mother's Day.
So remind me, it's white carnations if your mom is deceased and red carnations if your mom is alive.
That's right.
All right, well, do that this Mother's Day.
And so then I start digging into our newspapers. I was trying to figure out, okay, when did Newfoundlanders start recognizing it? So I know for a fact in 1912. So she starts in 1908. By 1912, there's editorials in local newspapers encouraging people to recognize their mothers and spend quality time with their mothers on Mother's Day.
Well, it's an incredible story, Mother's Day in the old colony. And, of course, Anna Jarvis, who was the woman who came up with the whole notion of Mother's Day. I'm Brian O'Connell with Larry Doey, Archival Moments on your VOCM. When we come back, the crowded sidewalks of St. John's, when Archival Moments continues on your VOCM.
Archival Moments. We'll be right back on VOCM. We now return to Archival Moments on VOCM.
This time around, we're going to talk about the crowded sidewalks of St. John's 140 years ago in 1879.
So 140 years ago, that's the day that I would have loved to be. If I could get into that time machine, I would go back to May 15th, 1879. And what I would witness would be all of the businessmen of St. John's, Water Street businessmen, and there's 42 of them, and they're all been marched off to the courthouse.
To the courthouse?
To the courthouse.
In front of the judge?
In front of a judge.
Do tell, what happened?
Well, so what was after happening was that business downtown St. John's, all businesses at one point were on Water Street. If you had any credibility in the industry, you had a waterfront store. But what was happening, there was a lot of tension, I suppose, between the businesses. Or what they were trying to do was appeal to customers, trying to drive customers in. And so what they were doing, they would start putting their product out on the streets, right?
So seems like a natural thing to do.
You put the product out there, and at that point, people are walking down the sidewalk and they're looking. But what was happening, of course, it was impeding the traffic. So you had so many stores, and there was so much congestion on the sidewalk that laws were passed in St. John's that said, you know, you can't have your goods out on the sidewalk.
So this was actually done by the colonial government in the legislature?
This is the government, and so the government had passed the legislation, and so now these 42 businessmen are being marched down.
So they were paraded to the courthouse in front of the judge, and the Evening Telegram reported men in the highest social and commercial positions in the country, and it continued. It was certainly unique to see so many of our leading citizens arraigned at the bar of justice, and we must confess that our feelings were truly indescribable when we entered the courtroom and glanced around.
And so that article actually goes on, and it's really quite. The newspaper reporters are really enjoying it. A lot of people along the streets that day were really enjoying watching these merchants. You know, these are some of the most well-to-do people in St. John's, and have been marched off to the court. So everyone's having a little chuckle.
So the constable just went and picked them up out of their offices?
They were all told, out of the office, get behind me, we're headed down to the courthouse.
Incredible. The telegram went off with some embellishment. There they were, men in the highest social and commercial positions in the country. Philanthropists, merchant princes, and politicians of the first order, constrained by the omnipotent mandate of the presiding genius of the Magisterial Bureau. In short, they were there on a charge of violation of the Municipal Regulations Act.
And the Municipal Regulation Act is that act that says you can't have product on the streets, and it's actually a very formal statement.
The telegram published the regulation or the act, and it reads, any person who shall place or deposit on any sidewalk in any of the said places except in transit any boxes, barrels, packages, or any other matter of thing so as to obstruct free passage on the said sidewalk shall forfeit and pay a sum not exceeding $25.
So $25, that was a pretty hefty little sum.
Yeah.
But what I imagined, though, is that these businessmen are being marched off. And so Water Street, like, that's the cultural, social, economic, that's the hub of St. John. So I would really like to see that.
So a couple of years before, Rockford's business directory, the business and general directory with classified lists of businessmen in St. John's, they have a detailed listing. So who were these businessmen? What businesses were there?
Well, I was really amazed at the range of businesses that are. So there was three photographic studios, there's four bakeries, there's three boarding houses, there's 15 butcher shops, there's 28 drapers, there's auctioneering houses, there's boot and shoemakers, there's hotels, 32 general merchants.
32, incredible.
And you know what was really interesting about it? The largest number, there was 50 wine and spirit retail stores. So I said, oh, yes. Well, can you imagine on Water Street, there's 50 places where you can, 50 doors that you can open up and walk in and buy your booze.
Wow, that's incredible. That's incredible. That is absolutely amazing.
But what's also telling about it is that when you look at that list, and so there's 28 drapers, there's 6 millinery stores, there's 2 blacksmiths, 2 coopers, 3 harness makers. Those are businesses that are no longer. Like, so there is no need now, of course, in St. John's or for a blacksmith shop. The cooper trade is no longer exists.
I'm fascinated with 50 wine and spirit shops.
You would
There's
be,
not
would
enough
you?
Room on Water Street for 50 wine and spirit shops.
Well, they were able to tuck them away because this is an official list,
incredible.
Right? So this is this is the official business directory for St. John's.
Water Street must have been just a hub of activity.
It would have been a great place to be. Yeah. I would have just loved to spend some time down there.
I'm just curious. So, you know, where would the businesses have started? Because we had the railway station, which is, you know, further west on Water Street. Mm-hmm. Would businesses have been that far down Water Street?
Oh, yeah, right down west as far as the railway station.
Yeah.
And there's still some business. There's still...
Yes, of course. Yeah.
So you have to imagine that every door you would open, you're going to go in, and that's the business level. And typically the families live up on the second level. So just about every house on Water Street would have also been a business.
With so many businesses on Water Street, it was not surprising then that they were buying for customers by putting products up.
And somewhere. I was just surprised, too, that they had particular product. You know, they it was, you know, so there was a hat store, for instance.
That's just hats.
That's all. Those three, just hats. Which reminds me, I went to England years and years ago, and it started to rain one afternoon, and so I ducked into one of these shops, and I was fascinated because the sign above it said shirt shop. And I went in there, and the fellow just looked at me, and he came over, and I just looked at him, and I said, oh, my God, it's just shirts, sir. There's only shirts. He said, it's a shirt shop.
That's it.
That's it. But I couldn't believe it.
Right? I'm just putting all your eggs in one basket.
How
right?
specialized are you? And well, he would continue to rain, and then he said, would you like something? And I did. I said, well, I'd like to have a shirt. And so I had my own shirt made.
Incredible.
In London, England, and I got it done for about £16 or something like that.
Tailor-made shirts.
Tailor-made shirts. So how fancy
was that? Well, I was going to say, what great taste, you know?
I can tell you. The only problem with it was it had cuffs, and I didn't have any
cufflinks.
And it didn't have a pocket, a shirt pocket, but that's the fashion now, but this is a while back.
A shirt shop, eh?
A shirt shop.
So what happened to these businessmen who were prayed at before the justice?
Well, I didn't follow up on it, but it's likely they would have gotten a stern. You know, now the courts and the government are just determined that this practice has got to stop because you're impeding the traffic on the streets of St. John's. So I think what had happened, because I didn't see the outcome of this particular court case, was what happened was that they would have gotten that stern warning.
Yeah.
So, but the next time around, they would have had to ante up their $25.
I see. You must have an incredible collection here of city directories.
Oh, yeah. So we've all of the city directories going back to, I think, the 1860s. And those are, you know, really substantive in terms of information. So if you're looking for, you want to get a sense of where your ancestors did their shopping or what was happening, what St. John's would have looked like, that's a great directory to look. And there's also these wonderful advertisements in there, you know, where they're trying to sell their product that are in that directory.
Are there still business directories or are they all online now?
Most of them are online now. I think the last ones I saw would have been.
And how does that affect archivists with things online?
Well, some of that has been captured. A lot of that, in fact, is being captured.
Okay.
There's the people that work in archives that specializes in new technology. So we're always migrating. So remember the good old days when you had the 8-track, and that was migrated over to whatever came after the CD and then CD-ROMs and all of this. So
MP3s.
So we're constantly having to migrate, right? So it's interesting. And there's some archives that actually specialize in collecting the machines, like so an 8-track machine. You go over to Memorial University and there are archives over there. They've got a number of 8-tracks because there's always going to be a few of those old 8-tracks that are going to show up that, you know, you'd want to capture the information that's on it.
Incredible, incredible. I was always curious how that worked out. I do remember business directories in the 70s and early 80s before things started to go online, and they were fairly large and fairly detailed.
Mm-hmm.
So you had the businesses, the owners, phone numbers, and you're right, advertisements as well. So.
And it was a great way of getting to, it is a great way of looking and seeing what the city would have looked like, where the businesses were located. There's lots of people now that are moving in. So there was a house that I lived here in St. John's just turned into an ice cream shop. And I'm sure the owners of that would be interested. Oh, what's the history of this particular house?
That's pretty incredible.
Are there any photographs of this?
And there wasn't just one directory, was there? I mean, there was Hutchinson's.
There was McAlpine's, which, and there was Rockford's. Yeah, so there was at least three or four on the go.
Okay. And more of the rooms here. You've got the archival collection, but what about the museum exhibit?
So if you want to get a sense of what the businesses looked like in St. John's, you should visit the... there's an exhibit on the fourth level. It's the... We Made a Home. It's in the Elmer Gill Ratcliffe Gallery.
Yeah.
And there's some wonderful photographs and scenes of businesses in St. John's and products that were sold out of those businesses in St. John's.
Good to see. Well, there you go. The businessmen in St. John's marched before the magistrate for cluttering up the sidewalks and obstructing the natural flow of pedestrian traffic. When we come back, making swish in Newfoundland. We caution you to drink it in moderation. We'll do that when we continue here on Archival Moments on your VOCM.
Archival Moments. We'll be right back on VOCM. We now return to Archival Moments on VOCM.
So this time around, making swish, but drink it in moderation. It's 1879 in the Old Colony, and we have a long history with swish barrels.
We do indeed. And this is a wonderful story that goes back to, like you say, May of 1879. And what you have to imagine, there's a bunch of young men, and they're all sitting down on the waterfront here in St. John's. And that one of the fellows notices some barrels that are standing over there in the corner. So someone is just after coming up with a horse and cart, and he offloads some barrels. Well, one of these fellows now sees quite the opportunity, because he recognizes these as liquor barrels, right?
Yeah.
So he sees this as an opportunity, and so off they go. They grab one of the barrels, and they started stirring it up.
What's the process for swish?
So it's essentially, like, you put some warm water in there, yeah, and you start, well, basically you're trying to get the liquor out of the wood. You know, there's always some liquor that's left in the bottom of the barrel, right?
Yeah.
And now what you're trying, you put some water in, warm water in there, and what you're trying to do, and then you start shaking the barrel and rolling the barrel, trying to get as much liquor out of the barrel and out of the wood as you possibly can.
Mostly rum, I assume?
Mostly rum, yeah. And
okay,
that's what these fellas were up to. And so actually what happened, and we know all about this because there was a reporter from the Evening Telegram who happened to be down. And so he said that one of these fellows got so drunk he was spiritualized.
The newspaper reported the effects of bad rum were practically illustrated at the south side of St. John's on Saturday. Several casks that had once contained the precious beverage were rolled together onto one of the wharves for the purpose of being filled with oil. When the idea suggested itself to the employees that free drinks could be obtained for all around by simply rinsing some of them out. There you have swish.
And there you have swish. It's a very simple process.
They went ahead and did this, these first...
Yeah, so they did some rolling of that barrel, and then the tasting had to start. And so the newspaper reporter was also there for the tasting.
Oh, I see. The newspaper reported, as a matter of course, a general misunderstanding arose, and a scene of indescribable confusion followed. One stalwart seaman belonging to the Dot, a fishing vessel of Prince Edward Island, who imbibed rather too freely, became so spiritualized that he thought that he could walk on water to the other side of the harbor. Divesting himself of the greater part of his clothing, he stepped off the wharf, but unfortunately his faith was weaker than the rum, and like Peter of old, he began to sink. After a considerable time had elapsed, during which work was suspended all round, some parties pushed off a boat, and the infatuated man was rescued. Wiser than before, he tried the experiment.
So they pulled this half-naked man out of St. John's Harbor who was loaded.
I got to say, the reporters back in the day were great at describing.
They were great, and they had a lot. They had a lot more freedom,
yeah,
to be expressive. And there were a number of newspapers, and everyone was vying, you know, to get the good stories. And so they tended to be a little more creative, you know.
Yeah.
So if they witnessed something, there wasn't, you know, they tended to also exaggerate it a little,
yeah,
you know, to give it, to spice it up.
Yeah, not unlike some of the tabloid newspapers of today.
That's right. That's a good analogy that you're making there. Right?
So he described the practice.
He described the practice and how it should be done. And so that falls right into about this same time. And some of these newspaper reporters would have been very sensitive, mm-hmm, to the fact that the temperance movement was alive and strong in St. John's. In fact, the temperance movement got started in St. John's in 1833. There was an Anglican minister, Vicks, who started it. But all denominations were keen on it. And so, in fact, so Vicks, the Anglican, started a temperance movement in 1833 that went up to 1938. And the Catholics had one that started in 1841. So these people were out to eradicate this whole notion of swish drinking, period. That was their idea. So the Total Abstinence and Benefice Society was one of those big organizations. And that lived on right up until 1985 when they closed their doors.
Really? That long?
Mm.
Wow.
And they had they championed the phrase, be sober and watch. And so that was always, that was their message. And they were around during this time frame when these fellows are over on the south side and having a few drinks.
People would ask about taking the pledge. So what was the pledge?
So the pledge was when you approached your clergyman, and then you swore for a particular length of time that you would forsake drink or you would give it up in its entirety. So, and there's actually the pledge that you did when you joined the society.
And it says, I pledge myself with the divine assistance that as long as I shall continue a member of this society, I will abstain from all intoxicating liquors unless for medical or religious purposes, and that I will discountenance any intemperance in others.
And there you have it.
Wow.
And the key phrase there is, unless you have medical or religious reasons for drinking alcohol. And I can tell you, they found the reasons. They found medical reasons to have a drink. Yeah.
I know we've talked about sealers and pulling the wool over a doctor's eyes.
That's right. And then there's this whole phrase, oh, I'm only having this for
medicinal purposes.
Okay, yeah. Yes, I would never consider drinking this unless it wasn't for my headache.
So if Nanny was having a glass of brandy before she went to bed, it was for medicinal purposes to help her sleep.
That's right.
I see.
And you know, like in every election, every year, the easy go-to for governments have always been to tax cigarettes and liquor.
Yeah.
And it always stirs a conversation because people are pretty passionate about their smokes and they're pretty passionate about their liquor. And so I think, back in May of 1973, there's an election going on here in St. John's. And John Crosby was the Minister of Finance. And he was suggesting during that election that they were going to increase the liquor taxes. So there was actually then a poem that showed up. And the poem is called Swish Will Cost $10.
Inflation isn't bad enough, but Johnny Crosby makes it tough. He's putting up the drop of stuff. Swish will cost $10. Into the barrels from the store, so much hot water you would pour. A $3 deal, but now it's more. Swish will cost $10. Liquor soaked into the wood, drawn out by water as it should. A swishy product makes that's good. Swish will cost $10. If Crosby likes to spread his name, quite sad will be his claim to fame. The jacked-up price on him we'll blame. Swish will cost $10. Making moonshine on one's own, will Mr. Crosby now condone? Why not? The way that things are going, swish will cost $10. That was in the Daily News in May
1973. So people were still concerned about their booze.
And swish will cost $10.
And they threatened John Crosby. If he puts up the price of the booze, if taxes go up on it, then you can be sure that we'll start making our own moonshine.
I see. Well, I'm assuming liquor prices must have gone up.
Oh, they always do. They never go down.
Yes, as a man said, if they only knew how much they were willing to pay.
That's right.
So what about collections here at the rooms? You must have the temperance societies.
We do. We have all of the temperance society records going back to the 1860s.
How many societies would there have been?
Well, just about every religious denomination had one. So the total abstinence was the Roman Catholic version. Yeah. The Anglican had a version. The United Church had a version. So each one of these, they were advocates for temperance. And so at the rooms, then we've got a really nice collection that's the Prohibition collection, 1917 to 1925. You want to get a sense of where people are drinking, how much they're drinking, who's advocating for temperance and who's wants to keep the liquor stores open. It's a interesting period.
Incredible story about alcohol and its relationship to the
alcohol. Can you imagine, so 1919, 1920, all the young soldiers are coming home.
Yes.
And the temperance laws are in place. So technically, there's no booze to be bought, right? But the boys came back and they said, well, that's going to change pretty fast. And it did, So then they changed those regulations.
That's an amazing story about temperance societies in Newfoundland. Now, you referenced university back in the 70s. You had some experience with swish barrels.
Oh, yes. There were some girls over in, I think it was Squire's house. And one of them
locked. Now, be careful.
Oops. That's true. Her mother is listening. So she locked into a barrel up on the liquor store up in Kenmount Road, and she brought it back to residence. And, of course, technically you're not allowed to have swish barrels in residence, right? And so that was hidden away from peering eyes, and so that was well hidden away. And every now and then you would go over and you'd say, because just out of sheer interest, not to drink it, just for sheer interest, I would go over and I'd occasionally roll that barrel with the ladies in the evening.
Yeah. And did you ever find out how it tasted?
Not well. I remember that.
If you could see the look of disdain on Myrie's face right now. So, and I'm also curious about the pledge. So you would go see your minister or your priest and you would recite the pledge and then... But what if you didn't want to do that anymore? What if you decided you wanted to have a drink on St. Patrick's Day?
No, then you'd line up St. Patrick's Day, and especially around Christmas time, if you were under the pledge or taking the pledge, you would go and you'd have what they refer to as getting the pledge lifted. So there were times in St. Bride's to be a line up to the priest's house around just before St. Patrick's Day and or...
You think he could just do a general...
A general absolution. Go and drink. No, that wasn't happening.
All right. Well, there you go. Swish barrels in the Old Colony. And they still continued up to not that long ago. Well, when we come back, we're going to talk about some of the things that are happening here at the Rooms when Archival Moments continues on your VOCM.
Archival Moments. We'll be right back on VOCM. We now return to Archival Moments on VOCM.
As always, we like to leave you with a little bit of what's happening here at the Rooms in St. John's. And if you're a visitor or you live in St. John's, it's a must-see place for sure. And there's always something happening here.
There's always lots of stuff happening here at the Rooms. And some of it is, people should participate in it because it's important. For instance, on Wednesday, May the 15th from 3 to 4:30, we have a Canadian citizenship ceremony here.
Oh, okay.
And those are always just wonderful. So you have these new Canadians, they've been living here for a few years, and just to sit and witness them becoming Canadian citizens, they are so thrilled, they're so happy. You know, most of them have struggled to get out of countries where, you know, there were difficult circumstances. Yeah. And to see them now become Canadian citizens with their families, it's just the sheer joy of becoming part of our Canadian
family. And when is that happening?
That's on Wednesday, May the 15th.
So is that open to the public?
That's open to the public,
So, if you want to see that. Yeah. Also, engaging evenings.
So engaging evenings are a regular feature. So that's Wednesdays, May 15th, and that's from 7 to 8 o'clock. And this time around, we've got someone in talking about a photographer who was in Newfoundland in the 1700s, I guess, Paul-Émile Mignot. Yeah. And so he was one of the celebrated early photographers. So that's going to be an interesting one.
You'll see some of his work, I guess?
You'll see some of his work, yeah.
Right. What about the art of backyard food production?
Well, everyone is quite interested in now. Like, it's Newfoundland food culture, sustainability. Those are always, or are now, on the forefront of a lot of conversations. And so we thought what we'd do is bring in Steve and Lisa McBride and what they are doing. They're doing an emphasis on backyard food production. What can you do in your own small bit of... turf that you've got in your backyard.
Back in the day, everybody had a garden.
Everyone had a garden. Like, everyone had, there was always the root vegetables that were right there within eyesight of your front window.
I think in some areas in town, you see these tracts of land behind houses, and you can still see the outline of where gardens were.
That's right. Yeah. And then everyone on their own property then would have had a small cellar for keeping the product.
Tell us about Faustus Biggood.
Faustus Biggood. Faustus Biggood is it's a cult. It's a movie all about Newfoundland, and so you're going to recognize that. You know, Greg Malone is Andy Jones, is in it. Kathy Jones is in it. Mary Walsh is in it. So it's all of those people from, I guess it's the 70s when it was done, and a lot of it was filmed down in the old colonial building. So it's just interesting to watch this because it's such early vintage, and you're almost guaranteed that you will recognize characters from St. John's that you know, and you'll say to yourself, now, whatever happened to him or her? I remember when they were very big into the industry.
Well, and when is that happening?
So that's happening on Friday, May 17th. So Friday night, and it's in the Rooms Theater.
You have a National Fiddling Day coming up.
It's National Fiddling Day, and so what we've got over, we've got some traditional performers, fiddling people, so they're recognized. So it's the Newfoundland Labrador Fiddling Association, and they're bringing over some of the younger fiddlers, and they're going to do some performance stuff between 2 and 3 here in the
And that's open to the public, of course.
And that's open to the
public. Not a ticketed event, no?
Nope, okay. That's you just come on for that.
And you have Sunday, May 19th, some music.
Sunday, May 19th. That's Sunday afternoon between 2 and 3 o'clock. Mm-hmm. This is a lady that I met here at Rooms. Her name is Aileen Lambert. It was really fascinating. So this lady, this man comes here and he wants to meet Larry Doe because he listens to the show Archival Moments over in Ireland.
Oh, okay.
And he came and he's looking, so we had a good chat, and then he introduced me to his wife and his three kids, and then he says that he's after renting a house in Branch St. Mary's Bay. And I said, well, I know that place. My mother came from Branch St. Mary's Bay. And he said, I'm pretty keen on meeting this woman, Eta Nash, and another fella, Mooney. And I said, well, I can help you with Eta Nash. That's my sister. So imagine how small the world is,
incredible.
Right?
Incredible.
He was there looking at me, so, geez, Larry, you must know everyone in the world. And I said, no, but...
And what's the connection there? What did he want to meet your sister?
Well, what she's from Wexford, yeah. And what she's done, she's looked at the songs of Wexford, yeah. And she's doing a comparison about a lot of the songs on the Cape Shore, my part of the world, yeah. Are old Wexford songs.
Oh, okay.
And she's looking to see how those songs have changed over the years and how they've, you know, foraged along here in Newfoundland. They've just done so well. Or on the Cape Shore, they've done so well in keeping those Irish traditions, even more so than the Irish have kept the traditions. He was, for instance, quite surprised to find the maypoles,
yeah.
out in Point Lance and in Branch. And that's something that...
And your sister's connection to this?
She's a singer.
Oh, okay.
And so he knows some of her songs from the Irish Archive.
Okay.
There's a wonderful online site, the Irish Music Archives. Yeah. And you can go in there and you can find the different singers who were recorded in the 1970s. And so now they're pursuing, or in this case, Michael Fortune is pursuing how these traditions have changed and how many of these songs have continued.
Well, that's going to be on what, Sunday?
That's on Sunday, May the 19th.
Okay. And they're going to perform?
2 to 3 o'clock. They're going to perform.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, in fact, Aileen is going to perform, and she's got three kids, 9, 7, and 5, and they're going to perform.
And is this a ticketed event?
That's by admission.
By admission,
yeah,
okay.
So.
Well, that's going to be fascinating.
It
now,
is.
I just want to talk about the 50s night.
Oh, yeah, the 50s night. So that's coming up May 24th.
Yep.
And so that's from 7 to 11. And that's a new feature. So it's through the decades. So this is 50s music. So we've got Bob McDonald and his band. And they are going
Bob's
to...
Bob's great.
Bob is really good. And yeah. He's going to be doing, you know, that 50s music. You know, we're talking Chuck Berry and Elvis Presley and that crowd, and there's going to be lots of dancing.
When you did the 80s night, people came in costume.
They did, and we're hoping for the 50s night that people will come in costume as
right.
well. We'll be encouraging it.
Get out your white socks and your loafers, your penny loafers, and your tight jeans and a T-shirt.
Now, you're really aging yourself. Yeah, of course, I wasn't around for
got
this.
Got a leather jacket you want to throw on there? That'd be
I'll have to Google out this or go over and check out your
closet.
I'm
trying to remember the hairstyle. was it a duck tail or something like that? Was it a lick? I don't know, a curl?
I'm going to have to remind you I wasn't around during the 1950s. This is your story to tell.
Thanks so much. I feel so much younger now. Anyway, that's going to happen what night?
And that's on the Friday night of May 24th.
All right, you make plans to attend. I guess that sells out quickly, huh?
Oh, it does.
All right. Larry Doe, he's an archivist director here at the Rooms. Thank you once again for hosting.
You're welcome. Thank you for coming out.
I'm Brian O'Connell. We'll be back again next week with another Archival Moments here on your VOCM.
Join us next week as we celebrate the colorful history of Newfoundland and Labrador with Archival Moments on VOCM.